pink hotel, a boutique.
Yeah, thank you, Joni Mitchell, for getting us started here today. This is Bernie Steffen with EcoLogic, and today we're talking about ecology and politics. That should interest everybody, I hope. I'm excited about it, and I have a special guest here, and his name is Guy Meyer. He hosts the California Times at Marin Community Access TV. And he does explore this intersection of ecology and politics. So today we'll discuss how politics shapes our relationship to that natural world and how ecology realities increasingly challenge our entire political system. So welcome, Guy Meyer.
Well, thank you, Bernie. It's great to be here with you.
So tell me a little bit about your past. You're an old guy like me, so we've lived a lot of life. So give us some arc of, I heard you did something interesting when you were 17.
Well, I did mention that I'm a veteran of Woodstock, and that little crazy event back in 1969 is still not only a motivating, but it was a kind of formative little moment.
Well, it brought together for the nation to see what was happening organically throughout the country, right?
It did, and it was sort of a test of survival skills where people were thrown into a situation that they were overwhelmed with not having as much resources as they needed to take care of everybody. And yet the whole thing, for the most part, went remarkably smooth. It became never hurts to have a stage with live music nearby whenever you're in the middle of a disaster area. Well, actually, that was part of the joke of Woodstock, you know.
So at the time, the Vietnam War was going on. Correct. So that was one catalyst for the hippie movement and the music revolution, if you will, wasn't it?
You know, very good for you to broaden the picture, for many people might not even understand or know, didn't experience that time. Exactly. 1969, the Vietnam War had been going on for a few years, and the whole...
69 is when we had the draft. Not just the draft. We had the draft, but we had a lottery system because a lot of us boomers, like myself, were graduating from college, and that student deferment was no longer a real possibility. But then came the luck of the draw.
You're so right on. And I was, in fact, that summer of 1969, I was 17 years old, about to turn 18. And like every young male at that age and time, the draft was a huge
motivator,
a weight maybe for some. The Vietnam War had been going on for some time. People were seeing this. It was not, you didn't want to be there unless you were.
And what was that war about? Like dominoes or something? I don't remember exactly.
Yeah. We were going to save the world from communism.
Yeah. Actually, we were going to colonize it with capitalism.
That's the other way of seeing it, indeed. Though JFK, in much of his insight, and people can, you know, find fault in what he did in his year and a half before he was assassinated, he spoke out on behalf of liberation movements across the globe, you know, Algeria and various things, even as a congressman, recognizing that these nations, that the whole colonial era needs to come to an end. Of course,
yeah,
we had
it's a new kind of colonialism we have now. I mean, the Spanish and the other Europeans, and then the British Empire was ruled basically by force, by the gun, by the ships, by the armadas, the and then the superior technology of being able to conquer people and get them to work for you to get that their gold out of our land, right?
Right. No. Yeah, I know. And now it's kind of simplified in terms of big business, I guess, really. The giant scale of the world's economy, globalism. And it's our new empire of colonialism still,
I believe. I think to detach it from our colonial past and somehow think it's something different is mistaken, because after World War II, the power that emerged was the United States. It defeated in the Pacific and it defeated in Europe. And it had resources like the old world had already depleted. And so it cashed in, and it had corporations who were willing to globalize. And it had, instead of us coming to find gold like the Spaniards did, it was us going to find energy, fossil fuels, oil. So one of my favorite expressions is, how did our oil get under their sand? But we were going to liberate that oil for the world and in the process make everybody's life better.
We are still a part of, yes, this is our existence to this day. We're still all caught up in this system. We buy into it in many ways.
What do you mean in many ways? How about almost 99.9% ways is how I see it. I find myself in such a minority who is willing to question this.
Well, yes. And even if we don't want to buy into it, what does that mean? How does a human being actually say, oh, I'm not a part of, you know, here I had to buy my plastic coated bottle of water today. And I do because, you know, I just recently bought a car. There's just so many elements of what our civilization requires of us right now, because we've developed this system, and it's moving on its own steam at its own rate.
But if we see it as that our form of colonialism was different, we had corporations leading the way. Mm. When I was young, I would hear news on the radio. And they talk about why this invasion or this assassination or this war was in a best American interests. So it was always phrased like, this is in our interest, our best interests, we've got to do it. I kept wondering, whose interests? I don't see how it's my interest, because it was always defined, my interests are, we're going to keep you safe. But when we get involved and invade places in the Middle East or in South America, I don't feel like I'm any safer.
No, and this has been going on for a long time. And I think back then, and going back 100 years or 150 years or whenever, the founding of the country, you always had a variety of voices, many of them who were concerned about or didn't want America to necessarily be a dominant imperial force,
right?
Even from the get-go, back
then they were isolationists, as we come to know now. And I don't mean that as a bad way. I mean that in a very respectful way and honoring way. I think the notion that one country should come together on how the world is ruled—that's crazy.
Yeah, it's interesting. JFK, in his altruism, you know, he believed that communism, and in those days, communism was, in terms of Soviet Union or China,
was the boogeyman.
Well, and it also deeply suppressed. It was a one-party state. There was not the freedom to voice any opposition. Yeah. People were locked behind a wall so they wouldn't escape to our side.
I want to go back, though. Yeah. John F. Kennedy was a smart man, right?
Yeah.
So if he said he believed that we were defending our way of life. Might he have been lying and actually continuing a sort of party line that gets you elected, but being more like what Trump is blatantly today for the, you know, the ruling class in this country, for the billionaires, as we call them now, for the captains of industry, for the corporate leaders, from those people that have financed his rise to power?
I don't think so. I think because he was in that, perhaps because he was born with that silver spoon, he was surrounded by wealth.
He liked wealth, didn't
well,
he?
Well, he didn't. His dad was so off the wall that when he sent him to school in London, he made sure that he went to a socialist teacher. He wanted to learn what they're saying.
Yeah.
And John did, and he still felt that this free enterprise system, this individualistic concept that America had to offer, was
the best system for the world.
Best system for the world. But he also altruistically, you know, knew that the world had problems. You know, he was the Alliance for Progress in South America. He had designs. I'm not saying it was anything, because they all got forgotten when Johnson took over. But he was attempting to say land reform in Africa. He traveled. He knew all these presidents by name.
Are you saying he wasn't smart enough to make the link between how the system that he wanted everyone to sort of benefit from, that could bring riches to everyone across the globe, and how that really wasn't going to be sustainable? Did you think he didn't think of that? Or
I think he was thinking of sustainability even back then in his way, though that was not in the language. But he was the only president who I ever heard officially use the term overpopulation in a speech.
Yeah.
Or not that I heard, but I've read about it.
Well, I will agree that he moved progressive liberalism further along than many other people had. Mm-hmm. So he definitely understood the desires and mm-hmm. the wanting to have mm-hmm. that happen. Mm-hmm. And then within that, though, I don't think was a true, let's all have equal income.
No.
So he still preferred that these people who finance his campaign, and it was cheap in those days compared to now, but still millions and ultimately billions of dollars that go into selecting a president in our system, that can't help but obligate that individual who gets that benefit to win in our system to somehow make it easier for those people to continue to grow their power, their wealth. He didn't really embrace the poor man as much as doing that while still thinking the rich people would be the catalyst for moving the world to a better place, so the poor people would get some benefit, I guess, trickle down, Reagan called it. But
I don't, anyways. Yeah. I can't go too deep into my knowledge of the JFK thing. Even though I've read books, I can't claim that I can just bring this knowledge up. But I do think that in general, he was very, connected to Americans on just the guy on the street, you know? And he wanted all the best for them. And I think he recognized, he fought U.S. Steel. He fought these corporations that, I mean, that was a major thing in his career, because they lied in their negotiating with the unions. I can't give you the details, but if anybody wants to look it up with JFK and U.S. Steel, it was a very bold and he called them out and said, you're not
I'm not denying that. I'm suggesting he's one of the top two presidencies we have, and the other one was Obama. But in my opinion, but regardless,
I disagree there. But
that's what politics is about, and we're good with that. We're talking about that. But right now, I'm going to invite our listeners, if you would, join in this conversation, correct something we've said that's wrong, oppose us, agree with us, just share your opinion in this conversation with about our politics and how it relates to our national world. And so the number for that is 707-755-9250. That's 707-755-9250. Now let's hear from our underwriter.
Cows thanks Cloverdale Connect for their support. Cloverdale Connect delivers their free paper every month to homes, businesses, and post office boxes in the greater Cloverdale area. They are also available online at CloverdaleConnect.com.
Cows thanks Open Door Insurance Services, a family-owned and operated business providing solutions based on product knowledge and expertise in personal, business, specialty, and nonprofit insurance. You can reach them at 707-874-2666 or on their website at opendoorins.com.
So I'm back with Guy Meyer, my special guest today. We're talking ecology and politics, and this is just improv. We don't have a set agenda at all. We started off with Woodstock. We've gone a little bit around Kennedy politics, and we can certainly move on. And I invited you to call in, so the line is open. Do that. And my name is Bernie Steffen, and you're listening to EcoLogic. So, Guy, what were some other major shifts that you think in our American politics that come to your mind?
I think there was a transition, I think, in the decade of the 80s that took place that people didn't recognize, when I think we really accelerated the move to being to globalism, to offshoring manufacturing, to, I think, the loss of a environmental movement, if you would say. I would say people talk about a movement, I think that it's something I visualize, something crackling and alive. I visualize energy and people going, some expanding thing. And I think it was sort of the opposite in the 80s, where at the beginning of the 80s, there were these giant demonstrations down at Diablo Canyon. People were being arrested, the Abalone Alliance against nuclear power. And there were things that, it wasn't just that, it was in the Sierra Club as well. It was a determination that it came through the Sierra Club, through our own immigration policies in a 10-year period, through the Reagan policies of defining what a YIMBY is and what a NIMBY, that things kind of became covered up or inverted, or I feel we lost the movement part of it. I don't feel there's a, quote, movement. I mean, I think that you and in your show, and I think I are both like,
we're still, voices in the dark.
We're still looking for the movement. It's like, could we light a match? Where is the, and I don't know, you know.
On my first show, I interviewed Derek Jensen. I had him as my very first guest on doing this show. And he talked about where the environmental movement went astray. And it had some belief that you could have our system and we could save the natural world. It believed there were things you could do. I canceled my Sierra Club membership when I got a piece that was advertising for a solar company.
Oh, dear.
And so when I realized that they too had been co-opted into serving an agenda that was not about throwing out the old system and starting over, but was trying to soft land us to a dream and belief that would work. And that actually worked. People believed in renewable energy. When the Prius first came out, that was the symbol that you were an environmentalist.
Right.
Not the people walking, not the people on bicycles, but the people who still drove to work, still required a highway, still were losing rubber on the road and having it drain into the water system. Those people were doing a make-believe environmental greenness. That became the environmental movement. And it was a way to have people feel like I'm doing what I can, because they felt overwhelmed. Hardly everyone ever said, we've got to collapse this industrial nation completely. We've got to collapse the global economy. We've got to, they weren't looking at it hard enough to see what was actually necessary to keep from moving us forward to extinction, as I'm advocating now. But I recognize why it didn't happen, because it was comfortable. I was seduced by it. I went around in Marin and campaigned in front of San Rafael City Council, Novato City Council, the Board of Supervisors, and we got Marin Clean Energy passed. That was a victory. Yes, we did it. Now the planet will be saved. Bullshit. I mean, it didn't make a dent in what has been happening in terms of our use of fossil fuels. And what it does is give people sort of some justification, some I'm doing all I can. And when I wanted to talk to people about how we collectively are unwittingly damaging the national world, I always got the response, well, I'm doing my part. I already changed my light bulbs. I already drive an EV. I'm already whatever. I'm growing my own vegetables, and I only buy organic, and I fought GMO, and I did all the right things. Mm. And still, well, those are all good things. Mm. But as I like to say it, they're making us less unsustainable. Mm. So, you know, we can be sustainable to the degree that we're really going down fast, or we can slow that process. And being a little less unsustainable just slows the process. It doesn't reverse it to living sustainably. The people that drop out, live off the grid, really grow their own food, really repair their own clothes, really fix their own shelter. That is sustainability.
Yeah, you brought up a number of things there. And ways in which, and I, you know, family members who got the Prius, and I just saw it too, and it was like, okay, and I get that people genuinely feel that this is at least one positive step I can do, and I get that. I feel that our two parties are the Democrats and Republicans. I think we got co-opted. Going back to Woodstock, or this very powerful impending sense of the draft and war, and we have to make a change because it was so in your face.
Right.
I don't want to go to Vietnam. I don't want anybody else to go to Vietnam. And there was this sense of like, we. That youth movement thing.
Yeah, we got to take control.
Was like, and we can't, and we represent the new. And I feel like it just gradually got co-opted as just like, oh, every 2 years or 4 years, just vote for Democrats. There's the bad guys over there. And I feel like that's in essence,
I agree that it lost its way. But where I disagree with you on is I don't think it got co-opted. I think all along it never wanted to embrace a more massive change that would have us all be living like the Pomo in the coastal Miwok. When I suggest that level of change to people, they don't want to talk about it. No, nobody's prepared for that. And I want to give you some examples because, you know, when I was part of that youth generation anti-war, there were a lot of communes that got started, but every one of them failed. There are now intentional living communities with older people trying to do the same thing. And that intentionality is great, but it's still not cutting the umbilical cord to the global civilization that we have all learned to live within and live. And we can't even imagine not and getting out of it, that there is an exit from that system. So I don't think it's co-opted. I think it was facing an elephant that was bigger than it could chew.
The movement. You're
the
saying.
Movement.
The
yeah.
movement. Did. Well, I think you may be right. And but I do think that everybody, just like the Prius, they put their designation of being somebody who's moving this planet to a better place by voting. But what I'm suggesting is that it wasn't going to take. We're not going there. It's not taking us to that better place.
I knew a guy in Point Reyes Station who had committed himself to just walking, to no longer taking the car.
John Francis.
And he got well known. Mm-hmm. And that's what I would say the movement needed more of.
Yes.
Not the, I'm going to buy a Tesla now, even though I hate Elon Musk and I don't want us to go to war, but it's such a nice car.
Well, there were a lot of things, and I was involved in a co-op in the late 70s and 80s in Marin County, and it lasted 10 years, and a little closer for adjusting the mic. And it came to an end. There were a number of events like that, perhaps almost like the commune experience, where things didn't last. And in retrospect, I look at and kind of regret, but there wasn't a way of keeping this going. I think what getting back to that countercultural element is that a movement has to it moves within it with a sense of freedom or out of control. You can't mandate a movement. You can't you can't demand.
No, it grows organically,
right.
Or it's not a movement.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so we're at this point in time here in the year 2026. It would feels like that we're getting closer, though it's always been getting closer for so long. We're just wondering.
It's not getting worse as much.
Well,
that's how I see it. So we're really not getting closer to anything. People aren't giving up industrial civilization.
Well, I'm not sure what they would get if they were to quote.
Derek Jensen is famous for wanting to help bring it down. And so they had monkey wrenching operations where shooting up a PG&E substation on the peninsula near, you know, Palo Alto, Menlo Park and all that was an act of defiance. I sympathized with the goal of trying to bring it down, but there's no way that we individuals or even in a movement, or even if we brought all the people with all the guns together, do that, standing up to this nation and its government and its military and its police forces is going to hasten that.
Yeah.
I've come to the belief that it's going to collapse because it keeps growing and it keeps getting worse, but it's never getting healed. It's never going all the way back. It's going three steps forward and one step back, five steps forward, maybe two steps back. That's our civilization. Mm-hmm. So I find that the United States is poorly organized for trying to have the people take it back to set the direction at a national level. We have a system of two parties. We have a system of 50% plus one wins the day. We have a system where now it takes mega bucks to even run as a candidate or get the donations to run to get to that. And then we have this notion that 200 to 300 million people can actually live under one set of laws. President doesn't have to, but we all think that we could really fine tune this legal system that keeps getting more complex every day. And all complexity requires energy. So the way we grow our legal system, just like we've grown our federal government in general, constantly growing it at the debt that can't be repaid. I mean, we're economically clear, have to collapse. But industrial-wise, we also have to collapse because the ability to keep finding the raw materials, the more lithium, more cobalt, more iron ore, the oils, the fossil fuels, the fracking in a short time span of maybe 2 to 5 years, what was in a traditional oil well, 0 to 40 years of production, that little boost shot of getting some more of the hard to get oil, that all can continue. It can't. So I'm a math major. I'm a physics major. Yeah. And when I look at it, there's no way in hell that this system can be saved from within.
Well, I think I don't think that the system can be saved, but what needs to emerge from the various pieces of the T.S. Eliot, the circle cannot hold. Do you remember that quote from a line of his poetry?
I don't, okay.
The center, like a gravity pull, and it doesn't hold. Things start falling apart. I think that if we can get back, and it may just come out of, I believe, survival. As we move forward, improvisation. Humans, younger generation, are going to find ways to improvise, I think, for simply survival.
You're absolutely right.
And they're going to be building our new civilization, like, is just, I believe, going to emerge out of the mess.
Couple of things. You talk about they, so you see yourself out of this picture. I don't, because you're here talking about it.
I was thinking
you're an elder, and you have a voice, and use it. I'm an elder, has a voice, has experience, and I'm using it.
That's very good. So yes, that reminds me, I'm totally with you. When I was a kid, for God's sakes, a beautiful black comedian who was an activist. Do you remember his name? You went around all the college campuses. Oh, gosh, he was so good. And he came to our campus and gave us a rallying thing, but it was like, you're going to change the world. And just like what I was saying, and I thought, too, like, what about you? You're not, you're like,
yes,
it's
yes,
all of us, yeah. Silver-haired people, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to take a break in a moment, but I want to just tag on that young people don't have enough experience or skills yet to actually make as big an impact as the people who have lived through this amazing period of time. And we need to bring back the notion of respecting elders. Elders have been paying attention and have seen, as we're talking about, an arc or a trajectory or seeing something happen that they have opinions about that should be listened to. And so that's what this show is about. And we have no callers yet. Why not? Come on, people. You must have something to say, or nobody's listening and we're talking to dead air. Let us know at least that we're not talking to ourselves only. So the number is 707-755- 7-8-9-2-5-0. I'll give it only one more time this hour. Write it down. 707-755-9250. I don't want you to have any excuses for not adding your voice to something that I think is extremely important.
Yeah.
So let's hear from our underwriters now.
Support. Community Market is a worker-run natural food store providing our community with organic food products since 1975. Located at the Barlow, 6762 Sebastopol Avenue in Sebastopol, you can reach them by phone at 707-407-4020.
Cows thanks the Occidental Community Council. The council strives to meet the unmet needs of the Occidental area, and the public is invited to its meetings every third Saturday of the month at 10:30 a.m. at the Occidental Community Center in downtown Occidental. For more information, go to occidental-ca.org.
Yeah, I'm glad to be part of Occidental Community Radio here. Many of you are hopefully listening over the internet, because in West County, even there, it's hard to always get a signal over the air. But I came from a community background. Guy is involved with community television in Marin, and I think that is a resource that is a good alternative to the, what is the Trump expression? The something media, the lying media. What is this expression? Whatever.
Yeah.
And I always want to argue and say, no, MSNBC, MS Now, they're better. They're more rational. They're whatever. But community radio is really free speech. We are not limited here, except by the FCC and seven words that I don't use in regular conversation anyway. So we're good to just voice our minds, and that holds for you as a caller. Come in. Don't feel like you're too radical for us, or you're too different, or you want to defend some part of something that we feel like you've attacked. Just please call. So on this show of Ecologic Radio, by the way, I'm Bernie Steffen, and my guest is Guy Meyer. And as we're talking, I want Guy to get back to something he was talking about, and I was kind of wanting to chime in on one of his points, but I want to chime in on almost every point you make. So please pick it up if you would.
Okay. Well, I'm not sure where I should be picking it up from,
well,
but
I'll give you some ideas.
Sure. Go ahead, Bernie.
Okay, we talked about Kennedy, but right. We didn't talk that much about who's the California guy who followed him? Nixon, and war on drugs. And was it Mrs. Nixon who said, just say no? Oh, no, that was Reagan. When we got to Reagan, it was just say no. You know, I had been, when we got Bill Clinton as president, I was feeling like, finally, we have a new generation. Mm. Finally, we're going to break with the old. Mm. And then I heard him say, yeah, I tried marijuana, but I didn't inhale. I knew he was a liar. I mean, that ended it for me. And where that all went, ultimately, as I became more radical and heard from more people with what are called radical views. And by the way, radical does not mean violent. I've never been violent. I'm not violently oriented. I don't propose violent. When I say radical, it's in the definition of the Greek word radish. And radish is a root vegetable. So when we go to the root of a problem, then I'm excited about that. But if we're just fiddling around with the leaves or the fruit or the seeds or whatever, we're not necessarily dealing with a root problem, root issue. And I saw our society always grappling with symptoms. Climate change, for example, everyone wants to say that's our number one problem. No, that may be our number one symptom. I think extinction is our number one symptom, but the problem is not climate change. And humans didn't cause climate change. Well, let me explain that, because indigenous people are humans. Their cultures are not causing climate change. So what is the dominant paradigm that we think represents all humans in its best form is what is our industrial civilization that started in Europe and propagated throughout the globe and has consolidated around business and global trade and all that sort of thing. That is our new global industrial civilization. It's not new. It grew for a long time, over hundreds of years. But that is the part of humans that is doing the damage.
So I want to get this, that concept of what you feel so strongly about. I want to be able to be connected, feel that I believe it too. Now, when you say humans are not the problem, is that what you my
yes,
quoting?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Are we...
That would mean our species has a DNA problem, right. Built-in problem, and I don't think it's built-in.
But, let's just say a indigenous community or a community of 200 years ago living maybe in Europe 200 years ago, they would not have been the problem. But now that we're at 8 billion plus people, do you see that as not a problem too?
Well, no, I agree that at somewhere we started living at more than the earth can renew. In other words, people lived for thousands of years, millions of years, in harmony with the ecosystem, within the watershed. Mm-hmm. That's where they ate.
Right.
That's where they hunted. That's where they grew crops, maybe. That's where they picked fruit.
A few million people on the earth, maybe.
Exactly. But it wasn't the numbers. It's how they lived.
Well, I'm not 100% sure that I would agree with that, though.
Well, let's get to population later, because that's something I feel strongly about that people point to as, see, it's not us. I only had two children. That's bullshit. We're living at a consumption rate where one individual here lives at five times what is the earth can replace. That's called five earths on an ecological footprint. So a math person understands that. A physicist will understand that.
That's our whole globe.
But no, that's not the whole globe. We are at five earths here. Europe is at four earths. Australia is maybe at 3.5 earths. All the indigenous cultures that are still living in their indigenous ways are less than one earth's worth. They are living sustainably. I'm saying all of us who are contributing to unsustainability are living in a way that the planet cannot survive. Whether it's because, see, the problem with population alone is of the 8 billion people, let's say, 6 billion of them are not causing the problem, but 2 billion of them are. So if we want to say humans are causing climate change, then it's 2 billion out of the 8 billion.
Oh, really? I
mean, yes.
Would you think that would be the...
Well, even if it's 70-30, I'm not, if it's 50-50, whatever. They still are living because we try to develop them. We colonialists, American colonialists, as did the European colonialists, go around the world converting people to their language, teaching them about Jesus, teaching them about how to... automate, how to use guns, how to use horses, how to farm when they maybe had been hunters, how to work as slaves to help get the gold out of the ground, whatever. They went around preaching that their system was what should, and then we used terminology in my lifetime of a developing nation as we are first world. We and the Soviet Union were first world. Then there are the developing countries, second world. And then there are the third world countries. Isn't that a derogatory term? That means we want that third world countries. They don't even see themselves as countries. They may be tribes. And we use that word tribalism derogatorily to be Democrat versus Republican. That's bullshit. That's not tribalism. Tribalism is when you live locally with your tribe, everyone helping to sustain everybody within the village, within the tribe, to protect them, to feed them, to nurture them, and to keep their tradition going forward. When there had been hundreds of thousands of these individual tribes on our planet, everything was cool. As we have industrialized and colonialized, those numbers of variables have come down. At one time in the North American continent, I'm understanding there were about 1,000 different tribes, or even if it was 500, sure, doesn't matter. Right now we have three nations that take the place of trying to govern. I'm saying three nations can't do the job that 500 nations can do. 500 nations can tend to everyone locally, not with having a ability to globetrot, to go around the world and enjoy and buy perfume in Paris or whatever you do. I've done that. I'm not putting people down for doing that. I live that life. I'm not saying I'm living sustainably. I can't. I wasn't trained for that. But I do see, and we can think outside of the way we live. And people will say, well, I don't want to hear you talk about anything that you're not are being an example of. Well, that's bullshit. We can think better than we can act. And I think it's time that we rethink what we want. And one of the things I want is us to start understanding why we should welcome the collapse that's going to happen by itself. It's not what we're going to do now in this system to survive, because we've been trained for that and we'll continue to survive and we'll do jobs where we can. We'll pick up money, we'll pick up food, we'll do whatever we can to survive because that's our nature.
Right.
But when something is forced on us, right, and the force that is going to be hunger and starvation and disease and the medical establishment fall aside.
Or whoever's in power.
The internet will collapse. Electricity,
there will be
24/7 electricity will not be available. Mm-hmm. The federal government cannot continue to be in charge. Mm-hmm. So one of the things I did, when I talk about doing, mm-hmm, that was a big decision, and I was criticized it for, in my own family. I said, I'm not going to vote in this system. I don't believe in this system. Mm-hmm. This system will never get us to where we need to be.
When did you make that decision, Bernie?
Maybe 10 years ago, 15 years ago. I can't remember. I had been a good citizen all my life. I always voted from the age of 16 forward when I could and became a U.S. citizen. I ran for office. I was elected twice to school board. I was a leader in Marin of MoveOn.org. We did protests. We for propositions. I told you I helped get propositions passed or measures passed at a local level. I've worked very hard in this political sphere, but it took me a long time to get to that view. And I was doing the radio show for 7 years with my partner, Bing Gong.
Do you think that nations in general, as part of your vision, need to be non-exist? I mean,
yes. I completely understand why the nation was formed in the first place, and it was for protection against the British people, the French people, the Spanish people, the native people, and they thought that collectively we could be more secure and fight back, and that was true. Independence was won and kept by virtue of banding together from the various colonies. If everyone had stayed only in their colony, they wouldn't have been able to fight back the British and the colonialism that was in charge to have that idea of having a freedom. But over time, the nation has continued to be the superpower. Supreme Court on top. Whoever thought the Supreme Court would favor billionaires over the average man? I always thought that was our last defense for the average person. But turns out, bullshit. That system doesn't work. The branches being a check on each other so that the democracy could be real and could flourish. That's bullshit. Because party now is bigger than branch.
I don't think it's over yet. I don't think it's...
But
I
would you agree that party... is the dominant force right now?
No, I think, and George Washington described it as the dangers of the fury of party spirit.
Yes.
Whether he was deeply afraid of the future of the country, the fury of party spirit.
That was wise.
And very wise. Washington was full of wisdom. Many people don't know that. And it's very fascinating to me. I was just thinking about that yesterday. Here we are, the 250th anniversary of our country. And there is no real sense that I picked up in my local community that this is impending, that this is a big thing. Trump, because of the focus on his whatever personality, has so diminished our own sense, to me, of American pride that we don't recognize. We haven't had good leadership on the environmental basis in 50 years, maybe more, maybe ever.
Quick interjection with a question.
Yeah.
Do you believe the two-party system will continue in kind of this way that we try this and it doesn't work, and we try that and it doesn't work, and then we try the other? And do you think the two-party system is a good system that is democracy working in our country?
I think our American system is a good system. I voted for Ross Perot twice, even though the second time I knew he was probably certified nuts. But I still thought he was a better choice than Clinton or whoever it was, the Republican at the time, might have been Dole. I think where the yin and yang, conservative liberal, I think is an eternal dance.
Yeah, but that's within the structure. See, I've stopped what people call politics. To me, is partisanship. Mm. Partisanship is a fight, and I refuse to play in that fight. And when I dropped out of voting, I find the news easier to take because it's not my team or their team. And my wife gets angry every day at Trump. And, you know, a lot of people do. And I understand why. I watch it for entertainment. But I see just as much wrong on the other side, where all our problems are going to be solved by better policy when we don't dismantle the underlying structures that are the problem. So I believe that neither party, even Ross Perot, even third parties now, if we made it easier for them to get in, the structure that is the United States and all nations and the United Nations, when the United Nations comes together, you know what it is, in my opinion? It's a coming together of the major corporations of the world. Because it's those corporations that actually run the nations invisibly. The voting is a veneer to keep everybody in line and happy.
All right. Yeah. I'm a believer in the power of the individual or the creative genius of Abraham Lincoln or a JFK or leadership to come along and to transform, to be that way. I think there are Democrats and possibly, I shouldn't say, I think that there could be Democrats, there could be Republicans who still have a bipartisan tendency in their brains to get something done. I want to read this from a book called The American Revolution. I became a Republican a couple of years ago, and that's a whole other story to talk about. But this is a quote from his book about the American Revolution.
Whose book?
It's Gordon S. Wood. He died just 2 weeks ago in a tragic accident. He's 92 years old. He's looked upon as one of America's greatest historians. Quote, "The revolutionary leaders were not naive and they were not utopians. Indeed, some of them had grave doubts about the capacities of ordinary people. But by adopting Republican governments in 1776, all of them necessarily held to a more magnanimous conception of human nature than did supporters of monarchy. Republics demanded far more morally from their citizens than monarchies did. If republics were to have order, it would have to come from below, from the people themselves, from their consent and their virtue. That is, from their willingness to surrender their personal desires to the public good. Much of the revolutionary rhetoric was filled with exhortations to the people to act virtuously, telling them, as Samuel Adams did, a citizen owes everything to the commonwealth. Republicanism thus stressed a morality of social cohesion and devotion to the common welfare. Several of the states in 1776, Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, and Virginia, even adopted the name Commonwealth to express better their identification with this process. So I think this is part of our heritage.
Yes.
This is part of who we are, and we need to
who we were and that worked at the time. At that time, we were not heading towards extinction. Since then, I've recognized that it's this very system that is the problem. And so being wiser within this system, to me, is virtuous, yes, but if it's based on, like I don't believe from the Bible what happened 2,000 years ago is relevant to how I should be behaving
now.
You see
now. That as an example of
that's
Bible?
An example of...
It doesn't feel relevant to you?
Because it starts with the idea that we are a nation and we have good principles and we're starting with a good plan.
Wouldn't that be a good idea, though?
Well, it would be, but not for 200 million, 300 million people making all the law. That is not possible. So structurally, it has outgrown its beauty, its usefulness, its ideals. Its ideals haven't been realized. They can't be realized, not because we don't have the right people elected to Congress or the right president or the right party in power. I believe, okay, I'm really strong on this, and I got to come to the end of the show, but I appreciate you saying or reading what you did, because a lot of people think, yes, that is a voice I want to give, and I encourage you to give that voice. But I really want to thank you, Guy Meyer, today for coming on this show and being willing to discuss very hard matters and reach into your experience and share what you think has worked well and what hasn't. If people want to know more about you, Guy, what should they do?
They could Google me, Guy Meyer, California Times, Guy Meyer, California Times, YouTube, or Guy Meyer, California Times on my Substack.com blog.
I found that if you just Google Guy Myers, those will come up.
Well, there's no S in it, so that would
Guy
be
Guy Myers.
Would be a,
okay, if you just.
But if you add California Times, that will help. There are like
that'll be one of the first things that comes up. I'm just saying it. Just remember Guy Meyer. So thank you, Guy Meyer, for coming on.
Thank you, Bernie.
And I want to thank our listeners. I appreciate the few of you that are probably still listening, because I know I'm very hard to listen to. But I'm not giving up on this idea. I want to say that next Monday, usually we're every 2 weeks apart, but this is the fifth Monday today, and we do odd Mondays around here. So on July 6th, I'll be back, and that program is going to be optimized for what? I draw on my years as a computer systems engineer. I explore why so many of our institutions continue producing outcomes almost nobody wants. We don't like that the corporations are giving us, but we somehow still stay in that mode, and we don't recognize what's really wrong. We're not asking the right questions. And the question I'm going to keep asking is, what are we optimized for? Because optimization matters. And I'll talk about how that is part of the trade-offs when you're a software engineer like I was. And you can't have everything. You have constraints, you have budgets, you have requirements, you have objectives, you have goals, you have all the things that need to meet, but you can't do everything for everyone. And priorities, objectives help prioritizations that then leave certain other things behind. So I hope you'll tune in a week, and goodbye for now. Thank you for listening.